Fog, as I say, I've highlighted the worst of the areas. It may well take a good part of the morning before that fog pops away. The northeastern shores of England may well be plagued by low-level cloud for a good part of the day. But here's the good news. Northwestern England, Western Wales, somewhere north of London, 14, 15, dare I say even 16 degrees. Yes, I dare. A really lovely warm day. For Northern Ireland, a dry day in prospect, variable amounts of cloud, a bit of a chilly start perhaps, a high on the day of around about 9 degrees. And for Scotland, well, certainly in the south, watch out for the mist and fog and a cold start. Further north, more cloud, the best of the sunshine in the south and a high of 9.
Many thanks, Phil.
Phil Avery with the weather forecast. Now on BBC Radio 4, we begin our new Book of the Week. Singer Tracy Thorn has enjoyed a 30-year career in the music industry, from dramatic career highs with Everything But the Girl to some years in the wilderness. Reading from her memoir, Bedsit Disco Queen, Tracy revisits the very beginning, when her passion for music was first ignited as a young teenager.
I'd always kidded myself that it was punk that got me started. It was certainly the answer I gave in interviews when I was asked about the beginnings of my musical career. It's not that the punk version of my story is a complete lie, more that it's a compression of a story that begins just after punk. I grew up in the suburbs in Brookmans Park, a little satellite town about 20 miles north of London. By the 1960s, when I was born, Brookmans Park was still clinging to its greenbelt status, while gradually and unavoidably merging into the rest of the homogenous sprawl that surrounded London. When I was 10, I thought my brother was God, he'd lie in bed. I was hardly at the epicentre of punk when it began. So why is it that my memory has fixed that moment in my mind as being the starting point and the reason for everything that followed? To show you just what I mean about having kidded myself that I was a true child of punk, I will share with you some of the home truths from my diary for 1976. Granted, I was only 13, and the diary itself is clearly a work in progress. The handwriting, for instance, going through dramatic changes as I try out different styles, slanting to the left for a bit, or suddenly getting very, very tiny. In 1976, the number of records I bought was 7. Rock On by David Essex, The Love Hangover LP by Diana Ross, This Time I'll Be Sweeter by Linda Lewis, The Beach Boys' Greatest Hits, The Eagles' Greatest Hits Volume 1, With Your Love by Jefferson Starship, I Want More by Can. Now, I'd be happy to hear any of these records if you put one on right now, and I'm not ashamed of them at all. But they are none of them quintessential punk classics. In fact, pop music doesn't seem to impinge on my life much at all. What this diary mostly reveals is that I'm more interested in boys and what's on the telly. But opening up my diary for 1977 is something of a shock. Suddenly, something happens. Number of records bought from June 1977 to end of year, 8. In the City by The Jam, Lights Out by Dr. Feelgood, All Around the World by The Jam, Something Better Change by The Stranglers, My Aim is True by Elvis Costello, Gary Gilmore's Eyes by The Adverts, Grip by The Stranglers, London Girls by The Vibrators. So at some point in June 1977, later than I had liked to remember, but not so late as to be totally embarrassing, I discovered punk, and it triggered in me a passion for pop music and a record-buying spree which was new and obsessive and which carried on for years. It's August 1979, and I've just bought my first electric guitar. It's a black Les Paul copy, which I bought for 60 quid from a bloke in London Fields via a small ad in the back of Melody Maker. I'm amazed at myself. Where have I found the audacity to buy this well, very masculine icon. And it does feel masculine. That's one of the things I like about it. It's heavy for a start. I hadn't realised it would be. I get it home, take it out and fondle it. Then I try to play it a little. And here's the thing. I don't have an amp, or even a lead. And if I'm going to be really honest, I'm not certain I even realised you needed one. I think I imagined that the point of an electric guitar was that you plugged it into the electricity socket in the wall and somehow a loud noise came out. I still have a lot to learn. When, shortly afterwards, I borrow an amp from someone, I can't bring myself to turn it up very loud. And so the quietness thing begins, born of necessity and ignorance and embarrassment. Only later will it become a kind of manifesto. What had prompted me to buy a guitar was my growing conviction that I wanted to be in a band myself. I had met up with a couple of boys from nearby St Albans Boys School, Dave Foster and Aid Clark, and in the summer of 1979, they told me they had formed a band. After 1977, it seemed you could just buy an instrument, get together with anyone else who had one, and go out and do a gig. Right now. For teenagers with the patience and attention spans of goldfish, this was enormously appealing. The phone rang at home one evening. It was Dave Foster. "I hear you've got yourself a guitar," he said casually. "Yeah, that's right. I'm thinking of forming a band with Jane Fox." "Well, we could do with a second guitarist. Why don't you come over and rehearse with us? You know, we could see how it sounds." Hey, this was cool. I was being asked to join a band as the token girl. I liked the idea, so I kept quiet about the fact that I couldn't play yet and got my dad to give me a lift over to Dave's house. I learned a few of their songs, and they were, if not madly enthusiastic about my guitar playing, at least tolerant of my ineptitude. And 3 days later, Dave rang to tell me I was officially in the band, which was called Stern Bops. Over the half-term holiday, I spent every day rehearsing with them, and after a few days, plucked up the courage to show them some lyrics I had written. These included Trendy Last Wednesday, in which I drew a cunning link between the fickleness of pop fashion and the inconstancy of boyfriends. I was trendy last Wednesday, like wearing leather trousers and expressions of hate. Yeah, I was trendy last Wednesday, but now I'm out of date. And Julie, my ode to Julie Burchell, whom I worshipped and adored. At home, I had pinned to my bedroom wall that iconic black and white NME shot of her and Tony Parsons leaning against a brick wall, though I had ruthlessly cut Tony out of the photo. And my song was written in her defence, as if she needed my help. Everybody hates you, Julie. Everybody hates you, but they can't see what you're really like, Julie. Everybody hates you, except for me. I went on to make a career out of being a songwriter, you know. As Morrissey would say, these things take time. Despite their obvious flaws, the boys loved these songs of mine. Theirs weren't much better. One of our more popular numbers was called Down the Horn and was about, well, going down the Horn of Plenty for a drink. The only real problem in the band was Paul, the singer, who was neither very keen nor very good. And so, when he failed to turn up for a rehearsal one day, the boys turned to me. "What about you, Trace? Can you sing?" they asked. Could I sing? I had no idea. It had never occurred to me. I wasn't a natural show-off, so was that really where I wanted to be? At the same time, I was intrigued by the idea and flattered to be asked. Too embarrassed even to try, as long as everyone was looking at me, I made what was probably a fairly unique request. "I'll have a go, but I can't do it if you're all looking at me. Can I go inside the wardrobe and sing from there?" The others looked at me strangely, But to their credit, they agreed, and so in I went. From inside my hidey hole, I sang David Bowie's Rebel Rebel. I emerged to a very positive response, the others all declaring that I sounded like Susie Sue. I was trying very hard to. And while I was quite pleased with myself, I wasn't sure that I would be able to do it in front of an audience. We could hardly take the wardrobe around with us. Anyway, the strain of trying to sing like Susie had already given me a sore throat. So the very moment that opened my eyes to the possibility of being a singer was tinged with the disappointment of acknowledging that I would never be a Susie or a Patti Smith. And at that time, I wasn't really sure what other type of girl singers there were. It was decided. I would stay on rhythm guitar and Paul would remain the singer. Though not for long. He soon left and Aid took over on vocals. It's Christmas 1979 and you can tell Aid and I are the perfect post-punk romantic couple. He gives me the Cure single and I give him Time Goes By So Slow by the Distractions. Because of his look, Mum is not very happy about me seeing him, and given the regularity with which violence breaks out at the gigs and parties we go to, she fears, quite reasonably, that we will be targeted. In these excessively tribal post-punk days, there seem to be fights all the time, and my parents are shocked at this development. They had, after all, based a whole lifestyle choice on the deeply held belief that suburbia was a safe place. Suddenly, this doesn't seem to be the case anymore. The culmination of my own personal experience of this atmosphere of violence comes when on the way out of a party at Hatfield Poly, there is an outbreak of fighting and a boy I am with gets stabbed in the head. I don't even remember seeing it happen. One minute, we are standing aimlessly around, waiting for a lift. Then there is a sudden scuffle and he is on the ground. An ambulance is called and I go with him to the hospital, where he is stitched up and then onto the police station where, still drunk and blood spattered, we attempt to help them with their inquiries. I don't go home that night, as I'm staying at my friend Jane Fox's house, so that by the time I finally get back home, the police have already called round to my house to get my statement, to the complete horror of my parents. I'm put in an awful quandary when the police ask me to describe what I had been wearing. This is apparently so that they can identify people described in other statements and get a full picture of what happened. But the previous night, I had changed outfits after I left home and before going to the party. For some reason, I had decided to wear a very tight pair of black plastic trousers and some ridiculous stilettos and looked, well, a bit extreme, in a classic, you're not going out dressed like that kind of way. Ever one to avoid confrontation, if at all possible, I had preferred to change at a friend's house rather than have a row at home. But now my plan has backfired, and here I am in our lounge at home with a policeman, both my parents lurking just outside in the hall, and if I tell him what I'd been wearing, my mum will be furious. On top of being in trouble for nearly getting stabbed, I'll be in trouble for wearing tarty trousers. Faced with the choice of perverting the course of justice or being told off by my mum, I do the obvious thing and lie to the police.
Tracy Thorne was reading from her memoir Bedsit Disco Queen. It was abridged by Alison Joseph and produced by Allegra McElroy. And Tracy Thorne has written a blog post about her book, which you can find on the Book of the Week programme page of the Radio 4 website. The shipping forecast follows in a minute or so. In the meantime, we're sailing by. BBC Radio 4. Now, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Tuesday the 5th of March. There are warnings of gales in Biscay, Bailey and southeast Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. Low 150 miles west of Trafalgar 977, expected Trafalgar 987 by 1800 Tuesday. New low expected just west of Fitzroy 982 by the same time. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, north at Cirra, south at Cirra. Southerly, 5 or 6, becoming variable 3, then northeasterly 5 in northwest Viking later. Occasional rain, moderate or good. Forties, Cromarty, 4th. South, 4 or 5, becoming variable 3. Mainly fair, good, occasionally poor. Tyne, Dogger, south, 4 or 5, becoming variable 3. Fog patches, moderate, occasionally very poor.